Infrastructure Week became sort of a running joke during the Trump administration. But President Biden has also talked a lot about infrastructure and is unveiling some plans in Pittsburgh today on that front. Meanwhile, progressives have been organizing around the Thrive Act. Thrive stands for Transform, Heal, and Renew by investing in a vibrant economy. And it was reintroduced by Senator Ed Markey and Representative Debbie Dingell last month. More than 100 actions supporting the act are taking place today, and progressive organizers have already succeeded in convincing the Biden administration and Democrats in Congress that they should go big on green infrastructure. The administration's Build Back Better proposal does that, but organizers say the problem is scale. In a nutshell, this is great, but it needs to be three times bigger. Today, I'm joined by Kaniela Ng, former representative for the great state of Hawaii and current climate justice campaign director for People's Action, a grassroots organization that's been mobilizing behind the Thrive Act. He's going to walk us through the details and what he's hearing from communities on the ground. That conversation coming up right after this quick break. I'm Amy Westervelt, and this is Drilled.
Maybe we could start with just what you've been seeing so far in the Biden administration on climate, like what you were sort of expecting and how the administration has met those expectations or failed to meet them, exceeded them.
Yeah, I mean, look, I supported Bernie Sanders in the primary election when
you weren't riding with Biden from the jump.
No. Well, I mean, Biden is like a self-proclaimed moderate, right? So I when Bernie lost, if you were telling me that you fast forward to March 2021 and we'd be looking at a $4 trillion climate like infrastructure package, I think you're crazy. That's a testament. Like, Biden is a really, really good politician. He's been doing this his whole life. He's been a he's been a U.S. senator in his 20s. Not in the fact that he's like a champion for the things that will actually help our communities, that the things we actually need, but in the fact that he figures out where the middle is,
right,
in the base he needs to win, and then he moves his ass there right away. And the fact that, look, when in 2018, I think when we first talked, like brand new Congress, Justice Democrats, they are running candidates, right? It's 2017. And the big platform pillar was like this $1 trillion infrastructure ask demand. And that was considered radical. The fact that we have Biden, who is self-proclaimed like a centrist, like a moderate in the middle, talking about $4 trillion, is a testament to the power of the movement and how much we've shifted the common sense of the general public. And that, you know, that's due to the Sunrise Movement, the youth climate strikes, like longtime environmental justice advocates, people making really bold bets on elections, like when the youth decided to support Senator Markey over Joe Kennedy, and like all these big bets that really paid off. So I'm surprised by how aggressive Biden has been in on climate. Is definitely not enough. Like the $4 trillion, or I think $400 billion, or somewhat, that's actually going to go to green investment. Like that's not like, I have a 1 and 4 year old, and like the place they grew up in will be underwater by the time they're 30 years old. Like we have a rail project here in Hawaii that is like 40 years now and it's still not done, and raising taxes on working people, like that's gonna keep draining money from them, and they're never gonna really be in, like, comfortably in the middle class ever. And like, it doesn't have to be that way, you know, like but it's like up to Biden to like step it up right now in this key moment.
I don't want to ask you to read the tea leaves too much, but like, how much do you think, how much further left do you think Biden can actually be pushed?
I mean, just over the last few months, we've, I mean, just the past few weeks, it was supposed to be a $2 trillion package. Now it's $3 trillion. Some articles are saying $4 trillion. I mean, hell, Joe Manchin, who's supposed to be the one hang up, the reason why we need to be more careful and move to the right, he went ahead and said like months ago that he's comfortable with the $4 trillion package. So, you know, at this point, there's not a lot of excuses left of why you shouldn't go bold. Like, not only is it really popular to go big, but you have like a majority, like all your members are online too now, like inside and outside. And it's only growing. Like, we're doing an action, we're organizing that action on Wednesday, on March 31st, Time to Thrive, where we already have like 102 people signed up to host events, like direct actions outside members of Congress's offices and homes, digital events. Like, the momentum is only getting bigger. And like, I mean, even in Manchin's district, like the Republican governor, Jim Justice, has been like, he's calling for more. He's saying like, we need to err on the side of spending too much, not too little.
You're organizing some actions now. What are the asks on the table for this week?
Yeah, so the day of action is called Time to Thrive. And we just rolled out the Thrive Act today. We had a press conference. You know, we had folks from all across the Democratic Party, Ed Markey, Jeff Merkley, Debbie Dingell. Champions include like Ilhan Omar, Jamal Bowman, Pramila Jayapar, like Ro Khanna, just a lot of good folks. And and not just all on the hard left either. You have like Biden allies on this too. So we're showing that you can have big solutions and a big tent. Like, you don't have to choose. So the demand is $1 trillion per year over 10 years. And the idea is like, this is a huge crisis moment. And like, the stars just happen to be aligned. We have a trifecta in the House, Senate, and White House. And we have a governor who's trying to be, I mean, a president who's telling everyone he's trying to be the next FDR and like pass New Deal-esque legislation. So we got to take advantage of it. Like, we have no choice but to plan ahead, especially when we know the other side is going to continue pushing austerity measures and allowing our communities to suffer. So we're demanding 15 million people getting put back to work through this investment, passing the PRO Act, so enshrining labor rights into law, and really advancing like gender, environmental, indigenous justice, racial justice, with particular attention to like Black and indigenous people. So that's the Thrive Act. And it wasn't easy to find alignment on it. It's taken like over a year and a half now as a coalition. And it didn't start from elected officials either. It wasn't just like some lawyers on the Hill just like locked themselves in a room. Like, no, we tried that before. In fact, like, we spent millions of dollars during the healthcare fight in 2008. What's different about this act is it's really from the grassroots up. We just asked politicians to sign up on it after it was already written. And it's like the organized, there's an actual campaign behind it, a campaign where there's millions of dollars not spent on ads or TV or consultants, but on actually field organizing. So that's how we're able to organize all these actions, because the outside game, which is one thing we learned from 2008 and 2009, is that you need the field operation. Like, you need the outside game if you're going to win anything, especially like anything that's going to be durable.
Yeah. It is interesting to me how quickly people have shifted their thinking on, like, you know, what is quote unquote reasonable and what kinds of policies we can actually implement. I remember when the Green New Deal was first announced and so many people in the climate space were like, this is asking for too many things at once. You know, like, if we try to get people to think about social justice and, you know, energy sources at the same time, we're never going to get anywhere. And then here we are, you know, 2 years later, I guess 2.5. And it sort of would be ridiculous to see a climate policy proposed without any kind of provisions for labor and equity and indigenous rights and, you know, gender and all of these things. So I don't know. I'm curious, like, are you hearing the same kind of, you know, quote unquote, be reasonable pushback that people were hearing even as recently as, you know, a year or two ago?
I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. The answer is no, not nearly as much as we used to. There's still some of that, but what's unreasonable is the fact that, like, we still have people who don't have drinkable water or breathable air, and we might not have a livable planet. we don't have livable jobs for many people that we're heralding as essential frontline workers, and like without essential wages. And even now with the vaccine rollout, they don't even have access to it because they're not in that, you know, that modicum of power and wealth.
Right.
So that it's an unreasonable hierarchy that we've created for ourselves. And the other thing is, like, if you speak to people's needs, like, people have diverse needs. So the more needs you speak to, the more diverse base you can build. So when you're like, do you expect people to sign on to social justice? Like, no. Do you expect someone who's worried about getting shot by the cops as soon as they step out of their house or even when they're asleep? How are you supposed to sell a clean energy standard to that person, you know, without addressing that first? If, like, you're a native person,
you're going to be like, we'll take care of you being able to, you know, not be killed later. But right now we need to talk about batteries.
That's right. And, like, if you're a native person and, like, your family home is getting stripped away by colonial forces, or you're an immigrant and, like, your family is getting deported and your kids are getting stripped from your arms, it's unreasonable to think that they're going to care about 2 degrees Celsius. You know, what they're going to care about is, like, the direct impacts. And unless you're talking about that and making the connections to like, the larger problem, which is this colonial extractive economy that we've created, then we'll get nowhere. But, look, when you focus on it all, then you build literally the biggest movement that we've ever seen in United States history. And that's where we're at.
You know, I feel so I spend a lot of time on history and, you know, how like the sort of counter movement to the current climate movement was built. And it's so broad, you know, like like the right wing does not just concentrate on climate denial. It's like, you know, the same people that are doing that are also working on, you know, quote unquote school choice and privatizing everything and getting rid of indigenous rights and getting rid of tribal sovereignty and all, you know, it's like, it's crazy to me every time I look at that and then compare it to the left, which is like, I don't know if we can, like, think about two things at the same time.
maybe there's truth in that, right? Like we don't have to, we can focus on, like, one to three things, but they don't have to be policies per se. Like, policies can be a means to an end, which is a shift of your value set. And that's what the right has been doing, right? Like the bootstraps, individualism, the free market, like, oh, these are all, like, value systems that the policies they propose and tactics even are just, like, meant to bolster, like, that frame of thinking. And, like, we can do that. Like, we can propose all kinds of things and kind of, like, eradicate these false dichotomies, like planet versus paycheck. You know, jobs are actually good. Like, climate action means tons of jobs. Like, this idea that we can just move on our own as individuals. Like, you can't keep the lights on in Texas on your own. Like, you can't stop wildfires in California on your own. I can't fucking raise my two toddlers at home working full time on my own.
Right? That's right. Yeah.
Like that. That's like, no matter what policies you're talking about, if it's like, if the crux of it is, like, we're stronger together, and if we invest in each other and our community, then we can actually make it through these crises. Then it's about the policy, but it's also about, like, building up like what it means to be in community with one another, and, like, enshrining, like, enough as a human right. Like, why do we let why is poverty even allowed in a country with billionaires? And just kind of focusing in on that, like, having moral clarity and focusing in on that on the values first, and, like, the policies, like, we want to win them and they matter because, like, people are dying. But if you actually, like, these are values that, like, everyone agrees with, right? Like, freedom to thrive. And if you actually knock on doors, which is another thing we're doing, like, this deep canvassing program around climate that we're launching this year, you can even win over folks in Trump country as well.
I mean, in People's Action Network, we have groups like New Jersey Organizing Project, Who's Your Action? Like, these are groups that purposely go out into areas that are considered no-goes for, like, the Democratic Party, and they organize people. And not only do they organize them into their group to take action, but they swiftly
radicalize them as well, because it's like hating the government and blaming the government and like folks that are weaker than you in like the social hierarchies that we created. That's not actually not that far from like pointing a finger at billionaires instead. And like,
that's true.
Yeah. Like a couple, like a few like really open conversations. And I should say, like, I, you know, when I was 22, I won my first election in a district that went Republican, like 46 out of 50 years in statehood in Hawaii. And it was by just listening to folks. Like the first rap, I knocked on a door, I knocked on 12,000 doors. Like the first rap was, hey, I'm Kaniela Ng. I know it feels like the government doesn't always listen to us, and that's why I'm at your door. And then I just full stop and hear what they have to say, you know? Sometimes yeah. there are issues. Sometimes they'll just say, this is great. And then you do that a couple times, they're going to listen to you, because the fact of the matter is, like, they might listen to talk radio, but most people just aren't that political. Like, they won't see themselves as political beings, and that's in many ways problematic. And it's not the case in many other countries with a like a more strong movement history, but like it's also an opportunity for folks on the left to like or in like the climate sphere to really change some minds and move people. I think the youth have been doing a really good job over the last couple years, but we can't rely on like children to educate parents. We got to go out and organize like millennials, Xers, boomers, everyone. We got to do it ourselves as well.
How do you expect things to go with the Thrive Act and the PRO Act? What's it looking like right now?
I mean, things are heading the right direction. It's just, you mentioned this on the top of the call, like the things that are sticking in the Biden administration, it isn't necessarily rooted in like traditional aspects of power, like in the organizing tradition, like Alinsky or like Marxism or anything. It's like, you know, someone just does a white paper or a one pager and they put some really nice branding with like some trendy gradient behind their mark and it sticks.
Yeah.
And it just picks up. And on one hand, I really welcome this shift from like anti-intellectualism that we've seen under Trump and the Tea Party to like some more thoughtfulness. But also, like, you know, it's like an emperor's, it could be like an emperor has no clothes thing. Like some of these organizations that have Biden's ear don't really have a base. I'm not saying they're not doing good work, but they're more in the advocacy sphere. Yeah. They're not necessarily, like powerful on the ground, like with real people. And, you know, in People's Action, and I know my philosophy is like, we like working people, we're the experts of our own experiences. Like we know, like if you want solutions, go to the people closest to the pain. Right. And I think that's something that we'd like to see a little bit more of in this administration. And if they did focus on like those people on the ground, you'd see like a lot more, not just rooted, but aggressive policy as well. And you'll be building bases that will help pass future legislation, but also help with your next election as well.
Yeah. So does it seem like the people who do kind of have his ear are aligned with the kinds of things that you're talking about?
Yeah. Actually, I think where progressives have been really strategic about was right when they saw the writing on the wall, and actually right after the primary, we didn't mess around. Like we knew that Trump was evil and like we have to do everything we can to beat him. So we didn't like play around. Like we threw down for Biden, and then we reminded Biden that he needed us to win. And very quickly we pushed to get our champions in his administration. And you see a lot of folks that really good people that were part of the transition team, like, you know, Varshini from Sunrise Movement. Cortez was part of the transition team. That in turn shaped some really positive policy. The fact that Deb Haylin is like the first Native, Secretary of Interior, that I think that's a big deal. And that wouldn't have happened without like the progressives getting in. So, you know, there's a lot of good folks in the administration, and, you know, it's part of it is getting good people around him, But again, he's a really good politician that has his finger on the pulse of where the middle is of the place he needs to win. So more importantly, is shifting that middle, the political common sense of the general public. And it's really clear that we've been doing that very well over the last few years, to see this shift from $1 trillion being too much to even Joe Manchin talking about $4 trillion. I think that's like the proof is really important.
How much are people connecting their kind of day-to-day stuff with climate? And is that even something is that even like a conversation that you're pushing with people on the ground? Or is it like, let's figure out, you know, people's most urgent needs first?
Now, I mean, one thing that Biden has been good at in terms of his messaging that really came from the movement is this focus that climate action means jobs. And right now, in this moment where you have 15 million people unemployed, a lot of these jobs aren't coming back. It's a prime moment for tech billionaires, who are the big winners, by the way, of this pandemic, to automate.
Yes. And so same with the oil industry. They're covering up so much automation shit by saying, oh, we lost jobs from COVID, but they were losing them already from automation. Sorry, go ahead.
No, that's right. And this idea that like a Green New Deal like cost jobs, like no, the jobs are disappearing now because of the private sector. And in fact, you need the public sector to get the jobs back. It's completely opposite of what right-wing pundits and austerity, mongers are pushing. And it, like, right now, like I look out the window, there's potholes to be filled, there's bridges to be repaired, trees to be planted. Like, there's so much work that we need to do that the free market just won't provide jobs for, because like our need, it's all wrapped in the profit nexus. But if we actually create jobs based on what we actually need for a livable planet, for you know, clean water, for infrastructure that's up to speed literally with the rest of the world, then it's a win-win-win. And I think that's the message. That's a real take-home message, because you can find projects, like you have abandoned malls because of COVID everywhere. Just like reimagining what that could be for your community. That's one way to bring home Thrive and the Green New Deal for everyone, no matter where you live, left and right, black and white, whatever.
But also, I feel like there has been, I think, a shift for people in understanding that government jobs are also jobs. Like, this is something that I think the right wing did really well for a long time, was convince people that somehow working for the government was like not a real job.
Yeah, I mean, when I was 21, out of college, the only job I could get was selling copy machines. You want to talk about like not a real job? Like, the private sector, the middle managers that make people feel important, like you really only need the people that produce it and like the capitalists. Like, everybody else in the middle, those layers and layers and layers in these corporations, are only there for colonial reasons. They're only there to make one company take up more land, to take up more space. Like, you could have, like, you know, so it's just, that's not real work. Real work is like building bridges, planting trees, caring for your neighbors. Like, and that's the other thing that's really like key in this Thrive agenda and like the Green New Deal bills that will be coming out, is like, we recognize that if we just created a bunch of jobs, traditional like infrastructure jobs, it'll be jobs for white men. So we got to be really deliberate that we have like gender justice, racial justice, and everything else in the front of all the policy that we create. Because even when you're talking about unions, like, there are like people of color that have been left out of unions work for generations now. So we need to make sure that we address that first.
Again, because I'm a history nerd, I just, it like blows my mind when I think about how the unions were like, you know, the original enemies of capitalists, and in such a short amount of time have become, you know, teammates with them in a lot of ways. So like, are you seeing some shifts in union leadership and sort of how unions are thinking about things now too?
Yeah. I mean, I really believe in the value of unions, like, historically, but also now. I think there's some, like, not every boss of any organization or any leader of any organization, not every leader is perfect, but like, I don't think that's the core of the problem, is like, you know, corrupted leadership or anything like that. It's the fact that like they, like you talked about transitional jobs programs and this idea of a just transition. And it's always been like this cutesy line that climate advocates, usually predominantly white, usually predominantly upper class, highly educated white folks would be like, oh, we'll have a transition program. And if you're a working class,
teach them to code. Yeah.
Yeah. Like honestly, if I was a union boss, I'd be like, get the F out of here. Like, how dare you? Like, show me it. Like, so I think that's sort of where a lot of this has come from. It's like, we weren't able to show them real benefits. And when we did, it was like this, these really half measures, like liberal half measures. But this idea that we can invest now where you can just walk into a public, like an employment office, your local employment office, and there'll be a job waiting for you, where you're not going to have like environmental, you're not gonna have your neighbors yelling at you, like environmental advocates or animal rights, like you're going to be cool. And you're going to be, there's going to be people from rural areas and urban areas doing projects with you, like people of across generations, across races. Like that's how you create real unity. It's not just public jobs. Isn't just good for your paycheck. It's not just good for the planet, but it's good for our politics. It's going to get people working together and really building something positive. So it's something real. And that's how I think we're seeing like unions take it a little bit more seriously, because frankly, we just haven't given them anything real up until now.
That's it for this time. Big thanks to Cornelia Ng for joining me. You can check out some of the links in the show notes for more information on the Thrive Act and People's Action. Again, we're at work on a new narrative season coming up soon, so make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss that. Please rate and review us wherever you're listening. It helps us find new listeners. You can also support us on Patreon. We're at patreon.com/drilled. That gets you ad-free episodes, access to exclusive merchandise, and coming soon, some bonus content, plus you get early release episodes of the new narrative season. So check that out. patreon.com/drilled. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.